Welcome to the Identity in Cybersecurity podcast, where host Ian Patterson talks to industry leaders about the cybersecurity problems that companies face today and the ways in which digital identity and digital identity technologies can help to solve these problems. The Identity in Cybersecurity podcast is sponsored by Pluralock, a global leader in behavioral biometrics, anomaly detection, and other identity technologies for cybersecurity applications. Here's our host, Ian Patterson, CEO of Pluralock.
Welcome to the Identity in Cybersecurity podcast. I'm your host, Ian L. Patterson, and in this episode, I'm speaking with Ian Patterson. Not a mistake, we share the same name. Ian is the Managing Director of Cycura, with 15 years of experience in enterprise-wide IT, including sectors like finance and healthcare. In this episode, we discuss how identity is at the heart of many breaches, the vulnerabilities of outsourcing business functions to third parties, and what it's like to be on the front lines of a breach. Let's get to it. So, Ian, how did you get started in cybersecurity?
I started in cybersecurity, it's been about 17 years ago now. I was recruited into one of the major banks here in Canada. My career had started out in VARs, so I was doing reseller integration type work. And one of the banks approached me for a contract role. I joined an infrastructure team at the bank doing, doing work around Windows servers because that was my background. And they needed somebody to bear the brunt of patch management, which was really back in those times and is still a really more of a black art than a science. And I foolishly put my hand up and said, yeah, I can do that. I know how to patch things. You know, I've done it in certain organizations, and then learned that doing it at scale properly with change management and stuff like that is much more difficult and complicated than doing it in a small, medium business type of environment. But so that kind of got me started down the path of really thinking a lot about and researching a lot about what vulnerabilities are important, what's important to get patched, how to prioritize vulnerability management in a large organization. And we scaled very rapidly. We were acquiring tons of Windows servers at the time, getting rid of old Solaris and mainframe stuff. So at one point, we were running one of the largest patch management infrastructures in North America. And then what happened from there was the security team that I was interfacing a lot with in the bank asked me if I would come over and do the inverse and run the vulnerability management program for the organization. So understanding where there's vulnerabilities across the organization. And then as we started acquiring U.S. banks in 2008, that program exploded and became probably one of the biggest in North America vulnerability management programs as well. So that was kind of what started me out, and though it was, that was kind of 8 years. And then after that, moved into healthcare. I was the information security officer for a hospital in charge of building out an information security practice, and then eventually also moved into managing the privacy practice, though my privacy team was really streets ahead of me on that kind of stuff. Learned a lot about healthcare and healthcare specific cyber needs and the unique challenges in that space, and why a lot of legacy healthcare applications really struggle with stuff, including identity. Identity is a huge problem in the healthcare space. And we could probably talk for an hour about that if you want. And then after spent 4 years four and a half years in the hospital, moved to a government agency that was part of the Ministry of Health in Ontario as the Director of Security Operations. So the mandate there is a centralized health record for all 13 million people within the province of Ontario. I was the Director of Security Operations for that organization for a period of time and looking after how we manage security around the sensitive infrastructure and databases that were within that environment, as well as how we interfaced with our partners, being hospitals and clinics and EMR providers, around how we secured those transactions with those customers. So that's kind of my background in cyber. And then I've been doing the consulting thing now for, I've been running Cycura as managing director for 4.5 years now, working on the client side of things. And it's been an interesting journey, and I've had a lot of exposure to a lot of different environments and industries here as well too. So,
seen a lot of challenges. And if we think about identity, have certainly seen impacts to organizations where there has been poor or no identity management in place and what some of those outcomes are, because, you know, part of practice that we have here is obviously incident response, incident handling. And so I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of organizations going through breaches and events, and identity has been the heart of a lot of those.
So given where you sit and you're able to see the threats coming at multiple organizations, including the ones that you've been at, what are the threats that are keeping you up at night?
I mean, the ones that have the most immediate impact, you can't discount ransomware, obviously, because the impact is so pronounced and the ability for most organizations to recover is very variable. You know, some companies might get away okay or relatively okay, and other companies, it's going to be an existential threat to the organization, depending on if they can or can't recover. So that's probably the biggest and most pronounced one at the moment. Business email compromise is obviously a challenging one, and could be largely averted with just some decent identity management practices in place, you know, multi-factor authentication. Or I think the other one that kind of worries me a lot is just dependence on third-party services. As we take a lot of our business processes, we start to move them outside the organization because that's not the core competency of the business. You know, so we outsource things like our HR function, our payroll function, and then we start to outsource other processes that maybe even tie into what we deliver to our customers and stuff like that. You know, what we see is a lot of these services are maybe not very well vetted from a technical perspective. People are in a rush to turn around and say, yeah, I'm compliant with SOC 2 or something like that. You know, I think practically a lot of these organizations might be more vulnerable than we understand. And then we are giving them important business functions and handing over kind of the keys to what we're doing day-to-day operationally to these organizations. And we are probably taking on more risk than we understand.
What does a best-in-class identity strategy look like today? And I think that you're touching upon some interesting things. Like, it's not just about the identity of the employees of my company, but it's the identity of the contractors working for the third parties who access the data at my company. Like, what does that look like today?
Yeah, it's so much more complicated than it was when it was just, you know, here's your Active Directory, here's the users in it. As soon as we started really thinking about cloud services and storing stuff outside of our organization and, you know, federating ourselves with others and things like that, it got really complicated. And traditional identity and access management approaches just are challenging to implement, even if you are just doing fundamental stuff like Active Directory. I think today you have to be really thinking about that diverse array of different services that you as an organization are leveraging. And you have to factor for that. And to your point, if you are relying on third parties delivering services for you, you have to also get your arms around, how do I validate that those entities are authenticating with me appropriately and that I trust them? And if there's a problem, that I have the ability to go and revoke things effectively. All of those are serious concerns. During my time in healthcare, you know, I became really aware of how reliant healthcare providers can be on third-party service providers of, say, clinical applications to be part of the supply chain, to be part of the technology support for those services that are delivered. So the company that makes the X-ray equipment, hardware, and the imaging system always has access into your environment. So they can go in and they can test patches and stuff like that. Or, you know, a company that takes care of the records management component of your EMR is going to have access in to go and make updates in case fields need to be changed to comply with some sort of new regulatory thing. So those third parties, they can present a tremendous amount of risk to the organization if they're not properly managed. So I think it's a very complex thing these days to build out a full identity and access management strategy and to execute on it. My concern is that it requires typically multiple technology components and controls to do it effectively these days. I don't think you can do it all. It's very hard to do it all under one roof. I feel like you get into, I use this to manage my privileged accounts and my secrets. I use this for my cloud services. So I have a CASB product. And then I use this to manage my Active Directory. And all of that makes for a difficult situation.
So describing potentially three different vendors or solutions just to manage identity, and then not to mention the rest of the cybersecurity stack, generally requires a large staff. And I think one of the things that we're finding, particularly with our customer base, is nobody is able to hire enough people quickly enough to meet the demand of their organization. Given that your company is effectively the SWAT team, right? I mean, people call you when their own security teams can't necessarily get the job done. So you have to recruit the absolute best of the best. What are you finding that's working for recruiting talent, retaining talent in the very competitive cybersecurity job market that exists today?
For us in particular, it's kind of two things. It's creating that culture that attracts the kind of people that we need and want as part of our team. So to your point, we bring on super talented individuals who are really good at what we do, the kind of offensive security pen testing, red team work. That's a very certain, very distinct personality type and skill set. And it's really self-motivated. You know, I like to break things, you know, CTF inspired hackers that want to go out there and learn and poke and tinker. And so we organizationally have to make sure that part of our DNA is that. So anything from, you know, as an organization sponsoring grassroots stuff like DEF CON, our local DEF CON chapter and sector, and which is now Black Hat here in Toronto, and then also things like Hack Student, stuff like that. Like, we make sure that we live and breathe that, and that the people that work for us feel that. So that's one strategy around, I guess, attracting and retaining people. You know, the other thing that we've realized you have to do is you can't always compete on salaries, because especially in Toronto, but I'm sure you're feeling it in Vancouver too, as you see a lot of the big players like Amazon and Google and Facebook and others move into town, and even the banks, they're driving the salaries up for even junior roles, because they want and need the talent as well too. So we're finding that you're going to have to take a chance on people you identify as best and brightest, who are probably just coming out of school or finishing a program, bring them on board and train them up and give them an opportunity. And then, you know, encourage them to do a lot of learning on their own, get upskilled with your team. They get the advantage of working side by side, you know, and you can grow them into that talent that you need. The reality is you can't invent these people. You can't just materialize them out of thin air. And a lot of what I'm seeing coming out of some of the school programs, it's really geared at like SOC analyst. You know, like, it's not geared towards what we need to bring somebody on to work on a project for a client. We can't trust that. So bringing in somebody more junior and then having them shadow somebody for several months before they're allowed to even try something, you know, that's client facing, that's been a strategy that we've implemented and has worked okay for us as well.
So given somebody who's been both on the offensive side, like you are now, and then also on the defensive side, both in healthcare and financial services, if you were thrown into a mid-sized financial institution as a CISO, what does that first 60-90 day plan look like? What are the first things that you need to do when you're coming fresh into an organization to take a handle and take stock of what's taking place?
For me, it always starts with, what do I have? I find most organizations don't have a good handle at all on their asset management as an organization, what their footprint is. Legacy stuff that people forgot about, but still an active domain on the internet and still trusted by my root authority, like, not good. And then also the shadow IT that's been going on in the background, because people have been working around the processes that either do or don't exist. So understanding what I have, and then taking a hard look at it and understanding business operations meets vulnerability side of it. So what is the important things that the businesses needs as far as my IT goes? How are they leveraging it? What are those, you know, critical processes look like? And then where are these things vulnerable, right? How are we doing from a perspective of things like patch management? I'm not going to worry too much about compliance if I'm an SMB because, you know, I'm probably not selling into many markets, but it's front of mind if I am doing a whole bunch of business in Europe these days, right? GDPR could be devastating to me, but most small, medium enterprises aren't up against compliance type challenges immediately. Once I have a good understanding of that, okay, where are my actual technical risks, right? So if I have the know-how inside, I want to understand how effective what technology and controls I have in place are today. So I want to test these things to see if they will stand up effectively or if they are functioning effectively because I am being attacked all the time. So, you know, I want to know what's working and what's not. And then from there, I can assess, okay, what do I need to implement to build out a security program that meets the needs of the business for the next 2 to 3 years? Because that's really as far as I can forecast down the road. So it's really about understand what you have, assess how it's being used and what the criticality is. And then, you know, it's a mixture of vulnerability assessment and actual really testing the effectiveness of those controls is going to give me as the CISO a sense of where I should be worried about what's going on inside the environment. There's obviously a lot of different contexts you need to look at there: policy, business operations, you know, what we consider important as an organization, what kind of customer we serve and markets we're operating in, all of those things layer into it. But I think what I've just outlined fundamentally are the places that you're going to get hurt from a technical perspective, regardless of what industry you work in. That's how I would approach it, at least.
So this is going to be a topical question because we've already actually paused the interview so you could take a call in regards to a breach. But what is the highest stress cyber incident you've been involved with? And if you can't necessarily talk about that one, maybe what would be one that you've heard of from folks in your network?
I can actually talk slightly about one because there was like a public announcement that we were working at, like a press release. So I was brought into this organization at the height of the Ashley Madison data breach here in Toronto. And I worked very closely with the board and the executives there on managing that breach as well as the technical team. So I was kind of in the middle of the storm there during that incident. Any breach, though, as an organization, we've probably worked on, you know, closing in on 100 different data breaches over the last few years. And, you know, going back in my career, I've been involved in ones in different organizations in healthcare and stuff. Any breach is a stressful situation. You're trying to get your arms around the root cause of the problem. You're trying to do containment of the issue. You're trying to understand, particularly today with the privacy concerns around breaches, you're trying to understand what the exposure of patient records, if you're in the healthcare space, or personally identifiable information in the consumer space. You're trying to get your arms around all those things very quickly so that you can bring awareness up to the executives of the organization, and all the way up to the board level, and then also report to the appropriate authorities. If it's the Privacy Commissioner's Office, or if you're dealing with bodies overseas, you need to assemble that data quickly, but you also need to try and be very sure of what you're reporting. You don't want to be too early and not have a full understanding of the breadth of the situation. It could be worse than you think it is. It might not be as bad as you think it is. You don't want to over or under report. So those are, you know, some of the initial things that you run into. And then when you're actually in a breach and running a breach, incident handling, then you're running up against the challenges of people burning out. You have only a limited number of technical people who understand how these systems are all put together, and you can't have them work 24 hours a day for the entirety of it. And then you have challenges around if you're on, you know, the consulting side, customers don't understand how long these things actually take and what the costs are going to look like. You know, you're lucky to get back up and operational from, let's say, a ransomware attack in about 7 business days. If you're lucky, it could be more like 9 to 14. And a lot of organizations can't afford that kind of downtime. So there's pressure there, you know, to help get these people up and running because they're experiencing significant losses. At the same time, though, you also have to take care to try and preserve evidence and rebuild environments in a sane and safe fashion so you don't go and expose yourself to the same thing again or allow an attacker back into an environment. So there's a lot of considerations. So every incident is quite high pressure. It just depends on the nature of it.
I mean, given how much breadth you've had over your career, what's the thing that you're most proud of but never really have an excuse to talk about?
Oof. That's a good one. Not becoming an alcoholic. No, I think the work I've done with this firm, you know, has been good. I'm quite proud of having put together a good team and built out a company that I think what we try and aim to do is really eliminated a lot of the noise for our customers. When we talk to customers, we try and approach their problems head on and we try and help them assess what they need and whether we can help even. And so what I've tried to do is emulate the thing I always wanted when I was on the buyer side of this, you know, when I was director at the government agency or, you know, at the hospital. I wanted to have meaningful conversations about the challenges that I was experiencing and how people could potentially help if, you know, they have a solution or a service that fits the needs that we have. Whereas, you know, I always find our industry is very much, I have a hammer, you look like a nail. You know, and there's certain colored hammers and certain colored nails, and this one only drives this nail. Like, that's always frustrated me a lot. So, you know, if I'm proud of something, I'm proud that I've built up an organization that competes with a lot of heavyweights in Canada. I think that's important too, that, you know, we can have Canadian providers that can work for Canadian and international companies. You know, there's a lot of pride that goes into that when we're all up against, you know, the big gorillas of the world. Building an organization that's, you know, thrives on that honesty and helping customers get to the heart of what their problems are.
Awesome. Where can people find you online?
We're at www.cycura.com, a new website coming up in mid-March, hopefully. But the existing one covers off what we do pretty well. I'm on LinkedIn, happy to connect with anybody on there. We do have a Twitter presence, but I don't know what gets posted on there very often.
Ian, always a pleasure. We'll see you at the next event.
Awesome. Look forward to it, man. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today on the Identity and Cybersecurity Podcast, sponsored by Plurilock. Join us again next time for more insightful conversations about cybersecurity and digital identity in today's hottest industries. To learn more about behavioral biometrics and other advanced identity technologies, visit plurilock.com.